or on their Facebook page as well. So, okay, so, you know, now that we got the plugs away for that show, and we'll, we'll be talking more about it, tell me what's been happening with you since March. I mean, the last time we chatted, it was like the online thing, and then...
Totally.
And then now it's like months and months later. We're into September. What have you been up to? What have you been doing?
Yeah, so leading up to March, I had been rolling out some singles that were going to be kind of... Like, I was ramping up for an EP release. I've only released one EP, some people call it an LP, about 2 years ago. That show that you were talking about, actually, was the release for that yeah. EP. And then since then, I just kind of did a bunch of singles and, like, a whole EP's worth of singles kind of thing. And so January, I released one, then February, and then March, I released one. And then all of a sudden, you know, the world changed on us. Mm-hmm. And I didn't end up releasing the EP as planned, as scheduled. Whether I should have or not, I don't know. But at the time, it just kind of felt like, you know what, this is not what people need right now. I kind of felt maybe even a bit self-conscious about it and just thought, you know, this is not the time to be pushing your, you know, listen to my music while the world's burning, you know?
It's funny you say that because other artists that I've spoken to in this current time period have said similar things. Like, it just doesn't feel right for me to be like, hey, I really need you to pay attention to me.
Totally. Yeah. That's exactly how it felt, you know? Now, instead of doing that, perhaps ironically, like maybe it seems disingenuous now when I say, because at the time I just started, at lunchtime, just started doing live streams where people just like sent in requests. Mm-hmm. And I'd just be sitting on my piano with my guitar. And for the first 11 days straight of COVID, for at least an hour, it actually usually went on for about 2 hours, people were just sending me in songs, and I was just trying my hand at whatever people threw at me, just trying ABBA, trying like, stuff from musicals, stuff from Disney, stuff from, you know, it largely consisted of friends of mine trying to embarrass me, but I did a bunch of that, and I actually like really loved that, and it started kind of picking up a bit. That's actually right in the thick of when you asked me to do that, you guys asked me to do the online thing you did that for the same week. Anyways, so I didn't release the EP that was planned, and I just kind of sat on it, and it's been done since then. It still hasn't been released. But then about I don't know how long, time is so vacuous right now, it was probably over a month ago now, I released an EP of three songs that just kind of had cropped up during COVID, and I called it March Morning 2020.
You released it in July, yeah.
Yeah, July was okay. I did just kind of off the cuff, really, you know. I called it a little peripheral kind of EP, and it really was that, because the title track, March Morning 2020, is just this little instrumental thing I played on a pipe organ. Mm-hmm. I have the unique privilege of living in a house which is attached to an inactive Anglican church that's over 100 years old, and it's got a pipe organ that works. So I can just go and play that.
So you did the recordings in that church then, or just for that one track? Yeah.
Just for the one track. Yeah. The other ones I just did in my bedroom here. Right. But you know, I can just bring my gear next door and then it's right there. So that's that organ that you hear in the recording.
Thank you.
when it's over was it's a little bit green listening to it now, you know, like as if COVID was some bad dream that we're going to wake up from. But I wrote that kind of in the thick of it, feeling kind of isolated and just like, oh man, we're gonna have a good time when this is done, you know.
When it's over, I'm coming over. We'll drink into the night. We'll keep the windows open wide. And I'll wake up in the middle and won't believe my eyes to see you sleeping by my side. just last month. A couple times there in my car, I caught a glimpse of who I was and who you are.
Right. Yeah, well,
there's
a lot of isolation going on over the last 6 months.
Totally.
And I think back in March, some of us were even joking that either you're going to get people who write the most introspective music that they've ever written thus far in their life, or complete garbage.
Totally.
And
totally.
Then put it out and you're just like, oh no. Oh
yeah.
No, what have I done?
Yeah.
But I've been listening to March Morning. And I dig it. And I'm really glad that you talked about that pipe organ as well, because I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah. It's kind of funny, that pipe organ. I had to, like, just, this is going to be a tiny bit audio nerdy here, but I had to, like, crank all of the high end out of it, because it was just so, it's so old that it just kind of sounded like
right,
like the whole time, so much air is escaping out of it. But that gave it a kind of really neat muted old sound to it, I thought, the way I had to treat it, kind of thing.
Well, you're not the type of person that strikes me to not try or to be afraid of trying something that way, because just by listening to some music, and I actually checked out the two videos of yours. Vermilion, that was the one? You shot that at This Ain't Hollywood.
Yeah, I did. That was the last show that I played there under, as Gareth Inkster. I played there with one other band since, but rest in peace. Eh?
Yeah, I thought it was a great performance. And when I was listening to it, I actually sent a message to our pal Adam, and I said it had a little reminiscence of early U2, but the U2 that was produced as Lanois was being introduced to the band. Like, he was putting his touch on some of the influence stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Could you give me an album or a song in particular, or a vibe? I'm a big U2 guy, so it would be
the Bad album.
Yeah, okay. I'm so into that.
Yeah,
Unforgettable Fire.
Unforgettable Fire. Yeah, that one. Yeah, just some of the sounds that he was getting out of that. It was just reminiscent of that. It struck a chord with me that way. It was just like, oh, it brought me back to that spot. So I was like, I thought I should mention that. So it makes sense that you are a fan of early U2.
Oh yeah.
Okay, sidebar, okay?
Yes.
I know we're doing an interview and everything, and everyone's listening to me, you and I talk about this.
That's fine. This is great.
Okay, but Gareth, seriously.
Yeah.
20-year anniversary of re-release of Beautiful Day, U2.
Yeah, well, that's, of course that's coming up.
That's coming up.
That's crazy.
But, like, you got to be hardcore into U2 if you want to buy that album now. Like, you got to be, like, collecting, like, the vinyl and everything straight down the line.
Well, if you're going to buy any album now, you're going to be hardcore into that band, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
Like,
right.
The way things are going, yeah.
Well, no, I was just wondering to see where you were, what your stance was on that whole thing.
Oh, you know, like, I don't know. I'm sometimes I'm a huge music snob, and other times I'm just like, yeah, whatever. I like it. Let's be fine. You know, like, I think, like, with that album in particular, like the Live at Sling Castle concert really sold me on a lot of that material, you know?
So you're buying it, eh?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not buying it, probably. I haven't bought, like, I'll buy, like, an LP, like, Fleet Foxes or Sexsmith or something. Someone who I'm really into who needs the money, you know? I'll buy their stuff.
That was my next question.
I'm not going to buy U2 stuff, though.
No. Okay.
saint. And for a moment I stood still.
Yeah, I kind of follow that kind of logic too, because I was thinking about it the other day, and my wife said, "Oh, are you gonna buy that album?" I'm like, you know, no. And because as much as I appreciate it for the fact that they're re-releasing it, and if they'll put in a couple different mixes or whatever,
sure, demos or something,
demos, that's cool for the hardcore fan, right?
Like, yeah,
I would, you know, I would much rather spend my money on buying a Gareth Inkster album or LT the Monk or Ellis,
totally.
That kind of vibe, you know, because
people who are actually grinding.
Well, yeah, and not to say that you two didn't grind for what they did. I mean,
sure.
That was their entire
sure.
job. The entire job was that band. That was it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they even said that in the past. Like, we only know this, and this is all we've ever done since we were teenagers.
Yeah.
But, you know, but as you said, the grind is like, we see the grind now where it's kind of like, even more now in the last 6 months, like,
oh, yeah.
How in the hell do you sell any music in this day and age?
Totally.
Hey, folks, you're listening to Steel City Music. Your host, Gunnar, here, hanging out with Gareth Inkster. We've been chatting about music and everything, and his new EP that has come out March morning. It's on Bandcamp if you want to grab it. You can find more information on his website as well. I sent you a message earlier. Please send me all your music because I want to feature it throughout this chat that we're having. Having said that, have you noticed a progression in your style of writing over the last 2 years at all?
Yeah. Let me think here. Yes, I think it's maybe an unsatisfying answer, but there totally has been. I think there's definitely a through line as well.
Mm-hmm.
The frustrating thing for me is that the releases don't necessarily indicate the progression insofar for two reasons. The first reason is just because you write something and then it comes out a year later kind of thing. Maybe not a year later,
but it does. Yeah.
It doesn't come out immediately, you know. It comes out a while later. And so it's kind of constantly out of date, as it feels that way to you. Like lyrically, you might be in a different spot, but then also musically, you might be like, man, I was really into that at that point, but now I'm into this, you know, and then you want to release this stuff immediately.
Sorry to interrupt, but is that something that that you suffer from, like the urge to release it right away?
Oh, yeah. It's almost, it's an immaturity in myself, and I hope to one day grow out of it, but mm-hmm. there's almost this urgency that, like, if you don't jump on it, it's going to disappear kind of thing. Or if you don't, like, just get it out, then it didn't exist or something. You know, like, I'm certain it's an immaturity born out of some sort of insecurity, but just that's the one reason that you don't necessarily notice the progression, is because it's always out of date. But then the second reason is that I have this thing that I'm in the process of trying to shake, where I realize that the songs that I'm most proud of, I haven't actually made, really. Some of them I have, you know, like Misfire. I'm really happy with how that turned out. I can think of a couple titles where I'm like, that
what,
is
so,
like, yes.
What, why were you so happy with Misfire?
It's got... I was really happy with how the arrangement turned out. I think the verse melody is both parts catchy, but also kind of a bit somber, you know? Like, it has a kind of durability to it. It's not sugary, but it's not, like, inaccessible. Mm-hmm. And then I mean, I wasn't afraid to take some musical kind of risks, maybe small risk, but risks nonetheless, where there's just like a pointless instrumental interlude that doesn't, not much happens. It's just kind of a place to breathe. And then there's there's this bridge that changes keys on you. And then it changes keys again, right? When these strings come in and the strings are huge. It just kind of felt like I actually kind of achieved a musical kind of cohesion that was
sure.
Equal parts kind of like try hard in the arrangement, but it didn't sound try hard. It just sounded effective, you know?
It didn't sound forced.
If someone uses a really big word and it was not the right time to use a big word, then everyone's like, okay, this guy takes himself way too seriously. Right. But if it's like a very particular word that is the right adjective for that moment, then it can just be really poignant, you know?
Thanks for asking me. I'll do my best to help you understand. It's hard for me to speak my mind. Lately, it's been so hard to clearly define. Does it come from inside? Chemicals misfiring deep in my mind. Or is there really something that's wrong? Something external? Am I just not strong? Just ran away. Is there something wrong with me? I don't think so, but I don't know.
No. I'm the one who's like, just my brain is just firing off of questions in my head that you said that. But Gareth, are you the type of person that writes the music first and then the lyrics, or is it just lyrics?
Yeah.
Is that the way it goes for you?
Almost always. Not always, but almost always it's music first, and then you find yourself kind of, if it's good, then you're kind of screwed, because that's kind of the position I'm in right now, actually, where got a few things that I'm so into that I cannot wait to record, but mm-hmm. I care about it so much now that I'm kind of crippled with this fear that the lyrics won't be great. Lyrics, but both in the writing of lyrics and in the delivery of lyrics, like in singing, those are the two areas that I don't feel as confident as in my arranging or harmony or even writing melodies and stuff. Like,
it's still something that lingers for you in the back of your head when
Totally. Yeah. You know, Ira Glass from This American Life, He has this little bit. I'm sure it's from a longer talk. I've only seen this one little. Someone put a little like graphic video to this 2-minute snippet of something he said once. I watch it every now and then, and he basically says like when you're, he's talking about like getting into creativity and stuff like this, and he talks about how you're getting it. You've got into it because you have good taste. You know, you've developed your own taste. You know what you like, and you want to do things like the things that you like. But because you know what you like and you've developed a sense of taste and you have good taste, you, when you start doing things, you just know how much worse they are than the things that you like. So you're doing all these things and you can see why they're not as good, and you wouldn't expect someone else to like it because you're not even that into it, you know? And he says that's when most people quit, but he says, but don't quit. You keep doing it and eventually it becomes good enough, or it becomes its own thing anyhow, you know? So I'm kind of constantly like oscillating between I am a hack and, oh, I'm so lucky I stumbled upon that. That's amazing. Maybe that's how it goes for everyone, you know, and just trying to kind of like, keep the inhale, exhale going to a healthy degree so you don't become completely obnoxious and cocky, but at the same time that you don't feel like you have nothing to offer.
And did that also keep you grounded as a person in regards to your music?
I hope so. I think it feels like I err on the side of like, man, fake it till you make it, or like, don't let anyone see that you're a fraud kind of thing, you know? Like I shouldn't even say error on that side. It feels like that's kind of what's in control most of the time. But then, you know, I look back at some of the things I've done. I think, man, that's not so bad. Like I'm kind of into that.
How do you deal with feedback from people that you create with? Because it's a Gareth Engster band. But when you say that, there's other people up on stage.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're playing, they're performing. When do you bring them into help creating the music? Or do you have it all mapped in your head as far as music-wise goes?
Well, both and. I think if we're going to talk about, like, those four other guys in the band, I think they'd probably have different answers for if you ask them, like, do you like it if Gareth, like, runs the show or do you want to do your own thing kind of thing? Mm-hmm. You know, I definitely always have a kind of cohesive vision in mind. Like, I can hear the end of it before, like, when I've started it, you know, right. Like, once I've got a song written. But that's not how to play music with other people, you know, necessarily. Sometimes they want that, but you can't just go in there thinking you're Brian Wilson and just telling everyone what to do, you know. Well, that's not fun for other people, you know. Brian, I don't think he was a dick at all. He was just a genius and people listen to him.
Billy Corgan is, though.
Okay, there we go. I'll have him now slotted as my anecdotal kind of example. But I am, playing with them, like, you know, some members are like, yo, can you send me a video of what you have in mind so I can practice this week? And that's great. It's like, yes, okay, I can do exactly, I know what to expect, you know? Whereas others are like, let's just, like, loop it and I'll try to figure something out. And you kind of have to be open-handed about that. Now, that's kind of changed a bit in COVID because I'm like, okay, we're not meeting up and jamming and recording and stuff in the studio. And so, like, March Morning was all me, that EP. In fact, a bunch of the releases have been all me until more recently I've been incorporating the other guys on it just because it's the right thing to do. And I love it. I love having them on it. I love having their input and this sort of thing. But there is a flip side to that, though. And that is that, like, there are certain songs which I've recorded only on the only because of the, like, encouragement and, like, insistence of certain friends, including certain band members, too. Like, the song Vacant, for instance, I put that out. If I'm completely honest, it's so whatever to me. I don't like being the kind of person who's released something he doesn't totally believe in, because I love the, like, kind of artistic fundamentalism of some of the people I look up to who are just like, my art or nothing, you know? They're, like, so dedicated to their craft. Mm-hmm. And here I find myself just kind of phoning things in sometimes. I don't like that, and I don't think I'm going to do that again.
Vacant. I don't want to be this way. I don't want to be this way for much longer. Waiting. I guess you could say I'm waiting for something liberating to be free. Can I be? I don't wanna be this way. I don't wanna be this way for much longer.
But like Lost is another song where I like it by the end, but it doesn't really do much for me like otherwise. I think I would let it play if it was on an album, but I don't know if I'd actually go out and buy it at this point, you know. Now these are songs I put out in the past, and so it's easy to say that about them. What I'm trying to kind of lean into more is less being, I want to be less dependent upon other people's seal of approval for what I release, because I can just look back and see empirically that it's kind of led me to release some things that are kind of vanilla, really, and kind of just like inoffensive. And
right. But there's always going to be in anyone's career, the music that they call it, that's your fifth track on an album. It's not
totally,
segue to this other song and you know,
And I have to be more gracious with myself, probably, about that. You're right. I think what bothers me is that like Vacant exists, and people will look up Gareth Inkster and they'll listen to Vacant, and some people love it. Like it's just like a three chord, you know, sure, rock song. But I have other songs that I've written and that are just kind of sitting around that are really important to me that I would be so proud of if people heard them, and I haven't released those.
Why haven't you done that?
Yeah, that's kind of actually full circle. The second reason when you're talking about the progression of my writing style. This is the second reason. I think that, you know, if I'm going to like do some pop psychology on myself, I think that's probably because if you really try, then you can really fail.
Oh, man.
But if you don't really try, then even if it doesn't work, it doesn't feel like a failure because you didn't really try, you know? It's almost like it's like a grown-up version of like the insecure kid on the playground, like just not really caring. I don't care. Yeah, whatever. I don't care, you know, because if you care, then it matters. And if you don't care, it doesn't. But that's a complete lie, because who am I kidding? I really care.
Yeah.
So if I don't really try, then I've already failed, you know. And I know this of myself because it was true for years and years when I hadn't released any of my own music. I'd been playing in Hamilton with a bunch of different artists. I'd played on a bunch of different releases. Friends of mine, artists I admire and I really respect, you know, Tim of the Brave, Scott Orr, James Hoffman, the whole Other Songs crew, really. I was in a band called The Good Hunters, and I was like kind of I sang the third harmony kind of thing and played a bunch of instruments, but it wasn't my group, you know? I was in a bunch of, yeah.
Well, sorry, no, was that experience in The Good Hunters, even though you were part of something and you said it was like you were the third harmony, was that was that kind of like a catalyst to go, okay, well, I kind of need to like do my own thing now?
Yeah, and it's funny, I think not specifically that experience, you know, that was a positive experience writ large. They all were. But I think I realized that all of them were, in my mind, like, were like temporary, or like, okay, I'll do this and then I'll get to my thing. But I didn't for years and years, for about 8 years, 7 or 8 years. And then I realized that I hadn't made my own music because, for the same reason, if you really try, you can really fail. And there's a G.K. Chesterton quote, which actually turned things around for me. Anything worth doing is worth doing badly. And that means that if the alternative is to not do it at all, just do it badly because it's worth doing. So just do it. Just get it done, you know? And so that's, I kind of like just embraced that and just started putting music out. And I put out the song last year, which had like, I mean, as far as like a debut EP for nobody, it had success, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It got on the radio a bunch of places. It was like charting a bunch of like college stations and stuff. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is great. And then I put out Misfire, which I was more proud of and didn't do as well, but still did well. Then I put out the last year EP. And I started being like, okay, look, I'm actually doing it and it's working. I'm getting recognition. Things are happening. People are listening to this and whatnot. I'm getting on playlists. Like, it was like, it works, you know? But I just kind of come to realize that I didn't actually escape that initial, if you don't try, then you can't fail. I didn't escape that. I just kind of raised the bar on it. And so now, sure, I can release music. I can make music and release music. But that's that, like, there's another rung that I got to ascend to here. And that's make really good music and try really hard. Pretend that it really matters, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I've come to notice, I've got my own studio here and I'm working on Tim at the Brave's new record right now. We tracked it all last month and I'm going to be mixing it now for the next bit. And I came to realize that I was working so much harder on that record than I've ever worked on anything I've done. And I'm glad, like, it's going to be a great record. You know, we put two 13-hour drum days, you know. And I'm thinking, like, oh, it was a crazy one, but they turned out great. But then I'm just thinking, like, I have never given myself this much time. I'll just kind of sing it and like, you know what? Yeah, that's a good take. Sure, we'll use that one. And I'll sing a double one if it's like out and I'll just kind of bump it here or there. But like, that's not artistry. That's just phoning it in. You know, that's just like making music in a technical sense. You know, all of my idols and all the people I look up to took it so much more seriously. And I'm kind of on this precipice or this kind of fulcrum now where I think I'm about to like switch to the side. I think, okay, you know what? For now, like, COVID's a bit of a gift here. I've got a bunch of songs, you know, I'm going to do them. I'm just going to try really hard. I'm going to like workshop them. I'm going to send them out. I'm going to get feedback. I'm going to tweak things. I'm going to, rather than like the March Morning EP, which really was just kind of phoned it in. Now, I turned out well. I liked parts. I liked a lot of it. You know, I like it in general. And I really like certain things about it, but I also made it in like 5 days, you know, like it wasn't a labor of love. It was more of like a peripheral thing.
If you were to if someone who was just listening to your music now, and we went on Bandcamp or whatever, and they just started mm-hmm. listening to your music, how does it make you feel when they compare you to other artists?
Well, first of all, if they're listening to my music, I feel privileged in general, you know. Still do. I hope I always will. I get compared a lot to Ben Folds.
Right.
Which is funny. I love Ben Folds. I've listened to him since high school and his different acts. But
because you can hear just in some of the I think it's like when I was listening to some of your songs, I could feel the vibe.
Yeah,
it's set into motion that put me in a space of like of feeling something, whether it was good or bad.
Sure.
You know, like because sometimes you hear. I mean, music is something different for everyone. Everyone wants something different out of it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can listen to Ben Folds. You're like, well, there's a tragedy within that song that he's telling. And I feel it. Whereas then I listen to Panama from Van Halen, like going, this may be the greatest song ever written because it's just so stupid. I enjoy it. You know?
Yeah, sure. It's not emotive necessarily.
No.
Or not in the same way.
Yeah, not at all.
And so I think probably for me, among the reasons that it might have that Ben Folds resonance is that I love the emotive nature of music. I love, like, I like to say that harmony. When I say harmony, I don't mean like the harmony that someone might sing. I mean like the way that notes work together to create chords. Like harmony is like adjectives to me, mm-hmm. you know? And I like using the right adjective, you know? I like being articulate, as it were, with music rather than just kind of the straight up 1-4-5, you know, if you know, like just the normal chords, kind of the what are called diatonic chords within the key. That said, you look at Used to It, that's all diatonic. Vacant, that's all diatonic. Back Here Again, that's all diatonic. You know, like the songs I've been putting out recently aren't the things that I most love. I got to start harping on about that. I really do like my own music. I do like it.
It just harkens back to what you were saying earlier, is that you did that music and it was like, I put it out, good or bad.
Yeah.
It makes sense, right?
Totally. And so to get back to your actual question, the Ben Folds thing, or what is it like when people compare me to other people? I love it. Like I'm not, some people kind of feel the need to be completely original and like incomparable to anyone before, you know, to be trailblazers. And, that's not bad in and of itself. And some people do it really well. Thank goodness people do it. You know, I can think of examples, but I honestly, if people just count me among the ranks of other people, say this is reminiscent of that, then I think I'm doing something right. Hi, I'm Garrett Langster. I'm going to be part of the Shift 2020 Festival on September 25th at 9 p.m. I'm going to be, featured on a video that's with some other great local artists. Would love to have you check it out. Check me out, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, anywhere, online, Spotify, all that kind of thing. So September 25th at 9 p.m., Shift 2020 Festival online. There's going to be a bunch of other people well worth checking out. Would love to have you tune in.
Back here again, listening to wind, trying to decipher a meaning therein. Is all the white noise add up to a voice, or are you simply defending your choice? The lot was recently bought. Soon there'll be change here, for now there is not. Go grab a drink, imagine your shrink. She'll tell you the usual, what do you think? Maybe she's right, maybe it's bright up over the clouds and you can't trust your sight. Rather think back before it went black. You may yet walk freely again in the light. Isn't it time to start to unwind? All all of your hopes from your memories of this. But I know the gist, can't but resist. But that opportunity is probably missed. Well, maybe I'm wrong, but man, it's been long. And all of us here thought you'd long carried on. And no, we're not mad, you had what you had. We just hate to see you so weary, so sad. To mention her name, still can't believe this is what it became. I know it's sincere, just know that we're here. Sure, I work early, but I'm good for a beer. And once you begin packing it in, we'll rally round, start to dreaming again. This memory is strong, but man, life is long, and no story worth telling begins with a win. Story worth telling begins with a win.
This is CIOI 101.5 FM. The Hawk is on the air.
Hey, welcome back to Steel City Music. Your host, Gunnar, here on this fine Friday afternoon. If it is Friday, I think it's Friday. Well, it's airing on September 18th on our show here on The Hawk. Joining me is a person who came on my radar back in 2018, just when I started coming back into doing Steel City Music as a podcast. Right now here is Shanika Marie. Are you there?
Hi there.
There she is. Okay. Thanks for taking the time out of your day to have a chat with me.
Not a problem. Happy to be here.
I will not keep you on the phone for an hour. There's no way possible. That's Gareth's Inkster's territory, and that's where we're going to keep it.
Okay, cool.
Hey, congratulations on Subtle Uncertainties.
Thank you.
Album. Yeah, I've been listening to it over the last couple of days. It's really, really good.
Mm-hmm. You know, thank you. I really appreciate that.
And some of it is also a carryover from your debut EP, Childish Games.
Yeah. So the song Mouth Eaters was mm-hmm. on Childish Games. And yeah, I felt like more could be done with that song. And it was really cool to kind of like go back to the song, revamp it a little bit, right, and re-release it on this newest album.
Right. Because when I was listening to the EP, I remember everything was coming back to me about when I was listening to it, I was kind of put back just a little bit about, wow, man, she's not relying on any effects on her vocals. It was very raw, the whole experience when I was listening to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that was the goal. Definitely with the first EP was just stripped down very like where I was at that moment. Like how I play guitar, how I like dabble on the keys, like that. It was very minimal, mm-hmm. and the focus was really on my vocals and my presentation and the lyrics. So,
what brought you to that conclusion of doing it that way?
I don't think there was any rhyme or reason. Like I didn't have any forethought of it being specifically that way. It was just, I translated it from how I was performing at the time and just brought my very minimal acoustic performance into the recording session.
Where did you record that? Was that in Hamilton or Toronto?
That was in Hamilton.
Now, do you originally hail out of Hamilton?
I'm originally from Stony Creek.
Oh, you're a Creeker.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm living out in the creek right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm down. Yep. I'm in my nice little my nice little courtyard. I'm surrounded by like really old Italian and Croatian people.
Mm-hmm.
And when I walk my dog down the street, they wave at me from their driveway with the garage door open. And
yep.
And some of them have hoses, and they go, "Don't come up driveway.
Mm-hmm.
Don't come up."
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I remember Stony Creek well.
Yeah. So where were you hanging your hat